J.D. Townsend leaned back in his chair, using an open desk drawer for a footstool. Having just consumed a plate of fried potatoes and biscuits spiced with sawmill gravy from the Whiskey Hill kitchen, he was resting his stomach, his head already nodding. His chin was almost ready to settle down onto his chest when the door was suddenly flung open.
What? Oh, damn it, Stoney.
But when he jerked his head up, it was to see Frank Drummond striding into his office, followed closely by Deputy Stoney Yates. J.D. was wide awake now. He lurched to his feet.
Oh, Mr. Drummond, what can I do for you, sir?
He aimed one quick glance in his deputy's direction and received a helpless look in return.
Sheriff, we got a hell of a problem in Whiskey Hill, and I need to know what you're gonna do about it.
Why, of course, Mr. Drummond, I'll sure look into it. What is it?
We've got a murdering renegade shooting and killing like a wild Injun.
The sheriff's eyes grew large as saucers.
My foreman just took one of my men to Dr. Taylor's office with a gunshot wound, and Lon Branch is dead. Shot down on my range by that murdering convict, Colt McCray.
Damn. We'll certainly look into it.
J.D. glanced again at his deputy, who stared back with the same mystified expression. The sheriff knew what everybody else in town knew, that he held that office for only as long as Frank Drummond permitted. Drummond owned most of the town and almost all the land surrounding it. The sheriff, the mayor, and the town council, they all answered to Drummond.
I want you to do more than look into it. I want you to ride out to McCray's ranch and arrest him. I'm a law-abiding man, so I've told my boys to let the law handle the murdering son of a bitch. But they're gonna stay alert in case he tries to bushwhack somebody else. I will protect my property.
Yes, sir, that's just what I was thinking. Stoney, get on your horse and bring the bastard in.
Stoney Yates stood motionless, not sure which way to jump.
Where do I look for him?
Hell, I don't know. His uncle came to town to pick him up. I expect that's as good a place as any to look.
Although his face was absent of expression, Drummond watched the uncertainty between sheriff and deputy with amused satisfaction. He had successfully planted the image of Colt McCray as a reckless killer, and as long as the law was actively looking to arrest McCray, any action his men took would seem justified. Although ruthless in his drive to own the territory, Drummond was smart enough to know the importance of keeping a facade of legitimacy for the people to see. There was no value in owning a town if there were no people to run it. There had been a modest swell of concern from the townsfolk when Sam McCray had been killed, and word had gotten back to Drummond that some thought he might have had something to do with it. Drummond had felt it necessary to call on Mayor Roy Whitworth to assure the folks that he not only had nothing to do with the killing, but had sent his men out to hunt for the killer. After all, Sam was his neighbor and would be missed. Now, if his men did the job they were sent to do today, the thorny problem of Colt McCray would also be settled. Afterward, Drummond expected Vance McCray to turn tail and run, and that would leave only Bert McCray to stand against him, and the old man would soon wilt under Drummond's constant pressure, especially with no way to get to water. Bill Wilkes sat up straight, listening. He motioned for Tom Mosley to keep quiet. Something, a sound or a smell, had caused the horses to blow and snort. Bill put his coffee cup down beside the fire and got up to take a look.
Something spooked the horses. Maybe a coyote sniffing around. I think I'll have a look.
Tom nodded and remained where he was seated. He and Bill had ridden Winter Nighthawk for many years for Sam McCray, and now for his son Vance. There was always something prowling around out there in the darkness, but most of the time it wasn't worth worrying about. He and Bill had rounded up 11 strays late that afternoon, and since they were close to Rocking D Range, Bill was probably worrying about the number of cattle that had been shot over this way.
Well, looky here, Lou.
Ain't nobody guarding these cows but two old men.
Jack Teach walked into the circle of firelight, an insolent sneer upon his stubbled face.
You just sit there, old man, if you don't want your head cracked open. Hey, Lou! Where are you?
Lou George emerged from the darkness, dragging the limp body of Bill Wilkes.
He fell and bumped his head on something.
I think it was my gun butt!
He dragged Bill over by the fire and dropped him.
You two low-down skunks, get the hell off of Bar M range!
Tom crawled over to his partner, whose head was split beside his eye. Blood covered half his face.
What's the matter? Couldn't you find no cattle to shoot? Damn rockin' D-scum!
Shut your mouth, you old fart, before I knock in your head. Besides, I believe we found about a dozen cattle right here.
George whirled around and started shooting blindly into the cows gathered in the small ravine. Lou turned back to Tom.
All right, old man. Where's Colt McCray? We got some business with him.
Is that what you two snakes come riding in here for? Well, he ain't hereabouts, and I don't know where he is.
Tom received a sharp rap across his cheek with Lou's pistol barrel.
Old man, I know damn well he's riding for Bert McCray. Now, suppose you start giving me some straight answers.
You go to hell! I'm too damn old to be bulldogged by trash like you.
Wrong answer again.
Lou aimed his pistol at Tom's foot. Lou looked up at his partner.
I bet he starts remembering pretty soon.
Jack Teach, his pistol drawn, stood over Bill Wilkes as the dazed old man began to show signs of consciousness. He started to get up on his hands and knees, only to feel the cold, hard steel of Teach's revolver barrel against his skull.
You just stay right there.
I want to lay it out plain and simple. If one of you don't tell me where we can find Colt McCray, and pretty damn quick, then there ain't no use in keeping you alive. Now, where is he?
I don't know.
I don't believe they do know where he is. Might as well clean up this mess and head over to the Broken M.
Might as well.
Lou stepped back from Tom. Shot in the gut, Lou doubled over in pain and collapsed. Stunned by the sight of his partner sprawled upon the ground, Jack Teach stood motionless, his mouth agape. The second shot smacked into Teach's chest, backing him up a few steps before he fell to the ground beside the fire. A ghostly figure astride a big buckskin horse slowly emerged from the darkness and walked into the firelit circle. His rifle ready, Colt watched the two bodies carefully. Before checking on his friends, he kicked the pistol away from Jack Teach with the toe of his boot. He then rolled him over to confirm that he was dead.
You good shot me, you son of a bitch!
I reckon so. I'm still getting used to this rifle. Shoots a mite low.
Lou made a sudden move for the pistol beside him.
Boy, am I glad to see you. We was as good as dead. I ain't as bad as I look. Just a bump on the head. Tom needs looking after. The son of a bitch shot him.
I'm sorry I didn't get here sooner, Tom. I was about a mile away when I heard the shots.
You got here, and you were the best sight these old eyes had ever seen. Me and Bill was about to go under, and that's a fact. I ain't worried about my foot. It ain't that bad. It just hurts like hell.
Colt pulled Tom's boot off and examined the bloody foot.
Maybe so, but it looks like you ain't gonna be doing a lot of walking for a spell. Looks like the bullet went clean through, but we best have the doctor tend to it. I'll take you into town. Bill, it might be a good idea if you went back to the house in case some more of Drummond's men are snooping about. Tell Vance to keep a sharp eye about him.
They was looking for you.
I figured. Like I said, I'll take Tom to the doctor, and I'll drop these two off on the way.
Dr. Henry Taylor pulled the curtain back to peer out his front window to see who was seeking his services at such an early hour. There were two riders. One he recognized as Tom Mosley. The other was a stranger. He glanced at his wife, then pulled up his suspenders and went to the door.
I ain't even had my coffee yet. What the... Tom, what in the world have you gotten into? You cut your foot or something?
Howdy, Doc. I got shot.
Dr. Taylor stood watching, looking hard at the silent man helping Tom and wondering if he had anything to do with it.
Bring him on in here.
Gunshot, you say? Shoot yourself in the foot?
Nope. One of Drummond's trash did it.
You don't mean it. How'd it happen? He didn't do it on purpose, did he?
After Tom had told of the late night visit from two of Drummond's men, Dr. Taylor shook his head.
Follow me into the examination room.
No.
I reckon I'd better get ready to patch up a few more crazy cowhands. You're already the second gunshot I've seen this week. Frank Drummond sent one of his boys in yesterday. I reckon you boys had anything to do with that.
Neither man responded.
Uh-huh. Sit down on the table there, Tom.
Yeah.
Who's friend here? I don't recollect seeing him around town before.
Colt McRae.
Oh, so you can talk. I figured that's who you might be. As a matter of fact, some folks were predicting the shooting would start since you've come back to town. I guess they were right.
Oh, it ain't Colt that started the shooting. If it weren't for him, I reckon me and Bill Wilkes would both be dead. Them Drummond coyotes jumped us in the middle of the night.
Dr. Taylor removed the rag from Tom's foot and studied the wound.
Bad business. I'd hate to see this sort of thing start again. We haven't had any serious gunfighting around Whiskey Hill for quite a spell.
Except for my father.
Well, yes, young fellow, I'm sorry about that. Still, we don't need any more, and that's a fact. Have you told the sheriff about this? You might want to go after them two that jumped you.
Ain't no hurry. They ain't like they'd go nowhere.
Dr. Taylor shifted his gaze up to fix on Colt's eyes.
Oh. I suppose I'm going to be busier than I thought.
He turned his attention back to the injured foot.
Does it hurt when I do this, Tom?
Oh, great Jesus! Yes!
All right. Tom, it looks like a pretty clean wound to me. Went in the top and out the bottom. As long as it bled out pretty good, and it looks like it did, it'll be all right. Hard to say if you broke any bones or not. Be damn lucky if you didn't. That may be the extra pain. I'll dress the wounds and you can see how it goes. You'll be able to tell after a few days if the swelling doesn't go down.
What do I do if there's a broke bone and the swelling don't go down?
Limp.
Oh.
Don't worry, I'll take a look at it after a day or two. Then we'll see. Now get on out of here. I ain't even had my coffee yet.
How much I owe you?
Never mind, I'll give Vance my bill.
The doctor looked at Colt.
You'd better be real careful, young fella. You ain't the most popular man around this town. I'm sorry about your father. Sam McRae was a damn good man.
Colt just nodded, then turned to Tom.
Well, since the good doctor's gonna save the bill for Vance, I figure I've got enough money to buy us a breakfast, Tom. I don't know about you, but I'm hungry.
That suits me just fine.
For the second morning in a row, Frank Drummond was awakened by the sound of someone pounding on his front door.
What the hell now?
He threw back the heavy quilt he had been sleeping under and got up. Throwing a long robe over his nightshirt, he stormed out of the room to see what trouble awaited.
What?
Mr. Drummond.
Drummond pushed Pete Tyler out of his way. He stared at the two corpses lying across their saddles.
Where'd you find them?
Right where they are. They were tied right there at the rail when I came out this morning.
Drummond didn't have to be told that these two stiffening corpses were the two men Pete had selected to take care of Colt McRae.
How in hell can somebody just ride right in here and nobody see them?
I don't know. I noticed him tied up here before sunup when I started to...
If it's war he wants, then by God, I'll see he gets it!
The image in Drummond's mind's eye was of Colt McRae sitting on his horse where the two horses of his men now stood, to be stalemated by one insolent man, a troublemaker the town had gotten rid of years ago, was more than Drummond could tolerate. His first thought was to call out his entire crew, now minus three dead, and hunt this menace down, and in the process clean out the hangers-on at Bar M and Broken M.
Want me to round up the men?
Drummond checked himself. Though ruthless, he was not a foolish man. His empire had been built under a guise of legitimacy. Even the vigilance committee that had rid the town of undesirables when the railroad was being built was heavily made up from Drummond's men. In recent years, he had even given thought to the possibility of running for governor of the territory. A vigilante-like response to this one man might turn the town's citizens against him.
No, not yet. I'll talk to the men tonight. I'm going to talk to the sheriff first.
In the cooking area of the Whiskey Hill kitchen, Mary Simmons turned to peer through the pass-through window behind the counter.
Well, look who's back.
Pearl Murray sidled over to have a look. So intense was their concentration upon Colt that they failed to notice Tom Mosley's bandaged foot covered only by his sock.
He's got plenty of brass. I didn't think he'd show his face in town again.
It ain't gonna make old Oscar any too happy, is it?
There had been a great deal of talk about the return of Colt McRae during the last couple of days. A lot of discussion about what, if anything, should be done about him. Waiting the table in the back room, Mary usually overheard most of what went on in town. And the talk the day before was of the shooting of two of Frank Drummond's men. One of them, Lon Branch, was dead. In Mary's mind, that wasn't much of a loss to the world in general. The discussion at the table was whether it was a gunfight or a murder. J.D. sent Stoney Yates out to Burt McRae's ranch to bring Colt in, but Stoney came back without him. He said Burt told him that Colt didn't stay at the ranch. Mary wondered what J.D. would do if he knew that Colt McRae had just walked into the dining room.
Well, you're gonna wait on him?
Of course I am.
Mary started toward the kitchen door.
You know, Oscar was talking about not serving him if he ever came in again.
Oscar's full of hot air. He talks pretty big, but I'd like to see if he's got the guts to tell him to get out when he comes back from the store. Besides, I still think he's nice looking. I'll wait on him.
Atta girl. Lady loves an outlaw.
Well, I see you came back to see us. What happened to your foot, Tom?
While Tom went into detail about the incident that resulted in his gunshot wound, Mary's eyes remained fixed upon the dark, brooding gaze of his younger companion, almost missing the point that there were two more dead.
You shot two more of Drummond's men?
I reckon I didn't have much choice.
Oh, mister, for somebody who's been away for a while, you sure didn't slip back into town quietly. Have you got yourself a death wish or something? That's a rough bunch you're taking on by yourself.
He ain't exactly by himself.
All the same, you better watch yourself. Why are you sitting in here? Don't you know J.D. might come in here any minute?
I'm sitting in here because I want some breakfast. And I haven't done anything but defend myself and my friends. Now, do you think Pearl can fix me some more of those eggs?
All right, but I'd really hate to see you hauled off to jail if J.D. comes in.
I appreciate that, but I'll take my chances.
Me too! We'll take our chances!
I'll get you some coffee.
Well, two orders of bacon and scrambled eggs.
Mary, what's he doing back in here? I bet it's because you were blinking your eyes at him the last time he was in here.
Why, Pearl Murray, I'm ashamed of you for even thinking such a thing. I guess he's back in here because he's hungry and your breakfast didn't kill him last time.
I wouldn't get too interested in that boy, honey. I don't think he'll be around for very long, especially if he's taken to shooting Frank Drummond's men.
According to what Tom just told me, he shot two more of Drummond's men last night.
Mary went on to relay Tom's telling of the attack upon him and Bill Wilkes.
Damn. Like I said, you're batting your eyes at a dead man. Let me cook some breakfast for those two. I want to make sure they're still here when Oscar gets back. He's been talking about how he might throw Colt McRae out if he showed his face in here again.
I swear, you're bad. Here you go, gents. Pearl's scrambling up some eggs right now.
Thanks.
Colt and Tom were just starting on their breakfast when Oscar returned from the store. Coming in the back door to the kitchen, he was met by Pearl, a wicked smile on her face.
Look who's sitting in the front booth, Oscar.
Who?
Pearl didn't answer. Oscar walked over to the pass-through window.
Damn.
He stood there staring at the two men eating breakfast for a long moment before suddenly turning around and retracing his steps toward the back door.
I'll be back in a bit.
He must have forgot he was aiming to toss him out.
Damn, Pearl, I bet he's going to get the sheriff.
Mary felt she should at least warn Colt. Mary hurried back to the booth. Tom Mosley was properly concerned when Mary told him that Oscar was probably going to fetch the sheriff. His bravado of a few minutes before rapidly dissipated. He looked at Colt anxiously now, but the news appeared to have little effect on Sam McRae's younger son.
Maybe we ought to finish up real quick and get the hell out of here.
Colt casually buttered up a biscuit.
I don't get a good breakfast like this every day. I don't figure I'm rushing through it. Maybe you should go, Tom. There's no sense you getting tangled up in my troubles.
Colt, he'll throw you in jail.
I haven't done anything to go to jail for.
Colt was thinking about the town that had railroaded him off to prison 9 years before. He had no intention of submitting to J.D. Townsend, even if it resulted in a shootout. The war was already started. He glanced up again to catch Mary's eye.
I could use another cup of that coffee, Mary.
Yeah, me too.
Ugh.
Mary shook her head, perplexed by their stubbornness, and left to get the coffee pot. At that moment, the front door opened and in walked J.D. Townsend, followed a few paces behind by Oscar Anderson. Without hesitation, J.D. walked straight over to the booth with his hand resting on the butt of his pistol. He glanced at the Winchester rifle propped in the corner of the booth opposite Colt, out of easy reach.
I'm placing you under arrest.
Is that a fact? What's the charge?
J.D. stood, shifting from one foot to the other, his hand gripping and re-gripping the handle of the revolver in his holster.
Murder, for one thing. The murder of Lon Branch. Now get your hands up on the table where I can see them.
Before you take a notion to pull that pistol, I better warn you that I got a pistol laying in my lap. So I reckon I'll keep my hands right where they are.
Mary Simmons entered the dining room and stopped abruptly. She stood paralyzed, holding the coffee pot.
We were just about to have another cup of coffee, Sheriff. Why don't you sit down and have a cup, and we'll talk about this mistake you were about to make.
J.D. hesitated, not sure what to do.
Damn it, J.D., Colt ain't murdered nobody. You ought to be riding out to the Rockin' D to arrest Frank Drummond. Two of his men jumped me and Bill Wilkes last night, and if Colt hadn't come along, we'd both be dead.
Tom held his wounded foot up for J.D. to see.
I don't know nothing about that. Right now, I'm talking about the murder of Lon Branch.
You people have got a habit of arresting folks for something they didn't do. I killed Lon Branch, but it wasn't murder. He came to kill me in my camp on McRae land. He was shot in self-defense, and no man has ever gone to jail in this territory for that. I'm not going to be the first.
The sheriff took a step backward and squared up his stance, his right hand tied on his pistol handle.
Mr. Drummond says you were on his range.
Drummond's a damn liar if he said that. And if he didn't, then you're a damn liar. Now, I think we're about finished with this little conversation. Tom and I are going to get on our horses and ride out of town real peaceful. At least, that's the way I want it. But if you draw that weapon, I'm going to cut loose with this one under the table. I expect it'll catch you right about your balls since I can't raise it any higher. You might be able to kill me. But you ain't gonna be siring any calves for a hell of a long time.
J.D. removed his hand from the pistol.
All right. There's too many folks in here to risk somebody innocent getting shot. Tom, you're saying this man was not on Rockin' D range when he shot Branch?
He sure as hell weren't. And it was Drummond's men that started the shooting.
All right, then. I'm gonna let you go now, but I'll be looking into all this to see who's telling the straight of things. Now, I think you both better get mounted and get on out of town before I change my mind.
As the sheriff moved over to stand beside a dazed Mary Simmons, Colt waited a moment to let Tom get up first. Then he laid the napkin on the table and reached over to pick the Winchester up from the corner of the booth. The sheriff blanched when he realized Colt wasn't wearing a gun belt. Standing to face the mortified lawman, Colt reached in his pocket and put some money on the table. He smiled briefly at Mary.
I think there's enough there to cover our bill. We'll be going now.
Backing all the way to the door, he followed Tom, who was already limping toward the horses. J.D. made no move to go after him. Oscar looked at the sheriff in disbelief. Pearl strode through the kitchen door.
Damn it, that weren't something. For a minute there, I thought we were going to have us a real shootout. Mary, you better clean off that table. And be careful of that napkin. It might go off in your hand.
Shut your mouth, Pearl.
Pearl looked at Mary with a wink and a smile. J.D. Townsend had been sheriff in Whiskey Hill for 6 years after serving as a deputy for 5 years prior to that. It had not been a hard job. The town had been cleaned up after the railroad crews moved out of Cheyenne, thanks to Frank Drummond's crew of gun-toting cowhands acting as a vigilance committee. J.D. was well aware of Drummond's control of the town, and he knew his job was courtesy of the man. Back in his office after the encounter in the Whiskey Hill kitchen, he sat and worried about his future as sheriff. Up to now, his bulk and bluster had been sufficient to cower most of the two-bit saddle tramps that wandered through town from time to time. But this morning, well, this morning had been different. When he had looked into the eyes of Colt McCrae, he had seen a cool fury burning deep inside that told of a lack of fear and a sense of nothing to lose. It had been a bluff, but the man had not hesitated to bet his life on it. The thought of future confrontations with Colt McCrae troubled him. Although it was still over an hour before noon, Turk Coolidge's saloon had been open for a couple of hours in order to feed the few patrons who were dependent upon a liquid breakfast. Turk nodded a good morning to the sheriff when J.D. walked in. J.D. went directly to a table in the back where Frank Drummond sat nursing a cup of coffee. Two of his men flanked him on either side, each working on a glass of beer.
You wanted to see me, Mr. Drummond?
Drummond looked up from his coffee cup and pulled a vacant chair back from the table.
Yeah, Sheriff. Sit down and have something to drink. A glass of beer or something stronger? I'm having coffee myself. I like to keep a clear head when I'm talking business.
J.D. glanced briefly at the two surly-looking men flanking Drummond. He had not seen him before, but it was not unusual for the owner of the Rocking D to hire on new men during the time of the year when most ranches were letting men go. J.D. sat down in the chair indicated.
Thank you just the same. I don't reckon I need anything right now.
Drummond fixed a steady gaze upon the sheriff for a long moment.
When me and the boys rode in a little while ago, I almost thought I caught a sight of Cole McCrae riding out the other end of town. I told him that couldn't be McCrae because McCrae was most likely cooling his heels in your jail. Now tell me that ain't so. Because I know that was what we agreed on. Wasn't it, J.D.?
Yes, sir. That's what I was aiming to do, all right, but there was some complications that came up.
Complications? What complications could there be? The man's a murderer. All you had to do was arrest him and throw him in jail. Then we would hang him like we do with all the murderers.
That's right. That's exactly right. But he had a witness that said he was on his own land and shot in self-defense.
What witness?
Tom Mosley.
Tom Mosley? God damn it, Sheriff! That's one of his own men! What did you expect the lying bastard to say? The only witness there was Brownie Brooks. And he's lying up in my ranch with a gunshot wound. Now, I'll tell you something else. That murdering convict shot two more of my men last night. He's got to be stopped.
J.D. realized that he had failed to question Tom about how he got shot in the foot. He didn't have to be told now why Drummond lost two more men. His rational mind told him that Drummond had sent him to jump Tom and Bill. But Colt must have come along in time to catch him in the act. Then if what Drummond just said was true, Tom Mosley might not have been witness to Lon Branch's shooting. Deep down, he knew that Drummond was behind all the trouble with Colt McRae, but he forced himself to think that he was acting for the good of the town. He had cast his lot with Drummond long ago, and he knew he was going to look the other way as usual.
Maybe I'd best ride over to Fort Russell and get some help from the army.
It's past time for that. I've got a better idea. Now, we've always handled our own problems in this town. We don't need the army coming in here to tell us how to run things. You just stay close to town. Go over to the dining room and sit down with Roy Whitworth and the others. Drink your coffee and swap your tales about the old days. Leave the job of running down Colt McRae to me and my boys. You can deputize Rafe and Slim here if it'll make you feel better. Just stay out of our way. I'll take care of our problem. The town will go back to being peaceful again, and your job will be a hell of a lot easier. Ain't that right, J.D.?
Yes, sir. I reckon you know best.
Drummond patted J.D. on the shoulder.
Good. Now you don't have to worry about a thing.
I've changed my mind. I believe I will have that drink.
Colt covered the distance between his uncle's ranch and Cheyenne in less than half a day without pushing the buckskin excessively. It might be a waste of his time, but he was bound to make the effort for the sake of justice, if nothing else. Bailey's Saloon was not hard to find, a run-down building that was little more than a one-room shack on the north edge of town. Glancing at the bar, he saw a short, balding man with an eye patch. At the one table in a back corner of the room, three men were playing cards. The bartender, Colt presumed he was Bailey, looked up when Colt approached the bar. He placed the knife he'd been cleaning his fingernails with down.
What'll it be, mister?
Colt gave the bartender a brief glance before shifting his gaze to the men at the table. One of the men playing cards looked a lot like the man he had come to find.
I could use a glass of beer. I heard Ronnie Skinner hangs around here.
Yeah, that's him back there at the table. Look, are you a lawman? I hope to hell you are. That damn no-account drunk hangs around here damn near all day panhandling for drinks.
Looks like he's got enough money to play cards.
He ain't got a cent to his name. They're using chips. If he's losing, he'll run out on them before they try to collect their winnings. Hell, if he had any money, he'd be drinking.
Colt left his beer on the bar and walked back to the table to stand opposite Skinner. All three players looked up to appraise the somber stranger.
Looking to play some cards?
Nope. I just stopped by to say hello to Ronnie.
Ronnie returned the steely gaze with one dulled by alcohol. Failing to recognize the stranger at first, he squinted his eyes, straining to see, when something about the face suddenly sparked his memory.
Colt? Colt!
He jumped to his feet, almost upsetting the table.
Goddamn, Colt! You're a sight for sore eyes. When'd you get out?
Oh, goddamn, I really felt bad about them hauling you off to prison for that damn robbery. Hell, I wanted to tell them you didn't have nothing to do with it, but you know, hell, I couldn't hardly tell them it was me. I'd have been a damn fool to do that, wouldn't I?
He rushed around the table and grabbed Colt by the hand, shaking it wildly.
Damn, this calls for a drink. I'm a little short right now, but if you'll buy, I'll pay you back later.
Colt stood impassively studying his former friend.
There ain't no hard feelings, is there? I mean, there were nothing I could do to help you. Hell, you gotta figure you was lucky they didn't hang you like they did old Tucker, right?
A jumble of thoughts were swirling around inside Colt's mind. Seeing the sorry state Ronnie had progressed to, he wasn't sure he cared enough after all these years to even think about vengeance. At the same time, he figured that Ronnie should receive some form of punishment for his part in the robbery and killing.
Nah, no hard feelings.
He planted a right fist flush on Ronnie's nose. Ronnie was driven back against the wall, where he slid down to the floor and fell over on his side, out cold. It was scant compensation for over 9 years in prison, but it did give him some satisfaction. He turned and walked to the bar.
When he comes to, give him my beer.
Back at his ranch, Drummond called his army of thugs together in the ranch bunkhouse to give them their marching orders. Colt had reduced their number to 10 gun hands, counting Brownie, who was still limping around with a bullet wound. In Drummond's opinion, that should be enough.
Now you're going to get the chance to earn the money I've been paying you. You three are going to ride over to the Bar M. You three, Broken M. Me and the other three are gonna scout the creek that runs between the two. That son of a bitch is hiding out somewhere on that creek.
What do you want me to do, Mr. Drummond?
I want you to sit here on your ass in case that jailbird shows up here again. If you'd done the job I sent you to do, we wouldn't have to go after Colt McCray, would we?
Properly contrite, Brownie limped back to a corner of the bunkhouse.
Make no mistake, the McCrays will fight, and I don't want a one of them left standing. Do your job, and you'll get a $50 bonus, and the man whose bullet stops Colt McCray gets an extra $200.
Drummond had exhausted his patience waiting for Bert and Vance McCray to accept his offers to buy their land. It was now time to take the land. And if they stood and fought, their deaths would simply be an unfortunate tragedy caused by their interference with a deputized posse in the process of capturing a murderer.
Tomorrow, sunup.
Vance McCray was a man with a troubled mind as he drove his buckboard along the rutted road between his ranch and his uncle's. Sitting stiffly beside him, Susan remained sternly silent, having already spoken her piece about the meeting at Bert McCray's house. She had at first refused to accompany him, but Vance insisted, saying it was too dangerous to leave her and their son at home, even with Tom and Bill keeping an eye on the place. Things had been bad before, but now there was bound to be real trouble. Colt had killed three of Drummond's men in the span of 2 nights. Drummond would never stand for that. They were all in danger now. Maybe Susan was right to damn Colt for igniting a range war. Vance wished with all his heart that the bloodshed could have been avoided. Now, facing the certain prospect of more, he wasn't sure he had the stomach to stand up to Drummond's gang of outlaws. He remembered his father warning that one day Drummond would make a move to overrun him and Uncle Bert. 2 short weeks after making that statement, Sam McCray was cut down by a bushwhacker's bullet. Vance still bore the heavy guilt for not avenging his father's murder.
Will he be there?
Well, I expect so. Nobody's more involved in this.
I just don't see that this trouble has anything to do with us. He shot those men. This business should be between him and the sheriff.
Lon Branch tried to kill him, honey. You can't much blame him for protecting himself. And Tom and Bill were jumped by Drummond's men. If Colt hadn't come along when he did, they both might be dead.
Maybe. but maybe they might have just been meaning to scare him.
I doubt that.
Bill said they were just getting ready to shoot both of them when Colt cut them down.
I still think your uncle should go over and talk to Frank Drummond and straighten this whole mess out instead of letting an ex-convict ride around like a wild Indian shooting everybody.
Uncle Bert's already tried to talk to him. And you know I've tried to talk to Drummond. After Daddy died, I went over there. There's no talking to that man. Colt's doing what I ought to be doing, and I ain't sure Colt was in on that bank guard shooting they sent him to prison for.
Susan stared straight ahead, silent once more. It was a somber gathering that greeted Colt when he walked into the front room of his uncle's house that evening. Standing in the doorway, he looked around the room, nodding to each face he saw.
Come on in, Colt. We's just getting started.
Rena came in from the kitchen and handed Colt a cup of coffee, never bothering to ask if he wanted one. He smiled at the ever-silent woman and nodded his thanks. Never changing her expression from the stone face she always wore, she returned to her kitchen. Aware of the eyes fixed upon him, he sat down next to Bird and cautiously sipped the scalding black liquid. He knew from recent experience that Rena kept the coffee pot to a near boil on the stove until it was empty. It was a small gathering. His uncle, Vance, Susan, little Sammy, his uncle's two hired hands, known only to him as Jesse and Tuck, and Tom Mosley and Bill Wilkes. It was an unimpressive army to fight a range war against Drummond's hired killers. As he shifted his gaze, it lingered upon the face of Susan Sessions McCrae, now his sister-in-law. She didn't meet his gaze, her eyes concentrating instead on the coffee cup held in her lap. Though she was an older, mature woman now, he could still picture her as a young girl, precocious and sassy. Until she glanced up from her lap, her expression was hard and defiant, but it also exhibited a hint of fear.
Look at us. A few old men against them gunmen that ride for Drummond. Sure, Vance and Colt are young enough, but they ain't but two, and they're going to be after Cole for sure. No hard feelings, but you're the one that started this war, and your life ain't worth much more than a plug nickel. Jess and I are too old to be fighting range wars. We've worked for your uncle for many years, but we're cattle hands, not gunslingers or bushwhackers.
Now hold on a minute, Tuck. Let's get one thing straight. Cole never started anything. This trouble was brewing long before he came back. Now let's not forget my brother was shot in the back. Colt's here because I asked him to come back and help us. Now, we all know what the cause of this is. Drummond's plan to run us out of our homes is what? The question we have to decide is what we're going to do about it.
Bert's right. Them two that jumped me and Bill was meaning to kill us both. If Colt hadn't come along when he did, there'd be two less of us here tonight.
The discussion that filled the next hour and a half hinged mainly upon whether they should all concentrate their defenses in one spot. This would mean abandoning either Vance's house or Bert's, something neither party was inclined to do. As the evening wore on, it became apparent that there was little they could do beyond what they were already doing. Bert and Vance would each try to defend their homes as best they could with the men they had, and they would hope for the best. Like a troop of cavalry, the gang of hired killers filed out of the Rockin' D gate, led by the imposing figure of their captain. Frank Drummond sat erect in the saddle, his spine as straight as a flagpole. The first rays of the morning sun crept over the line of rolling hills to the east, illuminating the frosty breath of horses and riders, creating a ghostly procession.
Pete, you and your men move out.
Right.
Drummond had given his foreman the job of calling on Bert McCrae's ranch because in Drummond's mind, that was the most likely place to find Colt. Pete Tyler was a capable man. He'd been with Drummond from the early days and had never questioned an order. Drummond was confident that Pete would run McCrae to ground and take care of his uncle in the process. Drummond would take three of the men with him to search the creek, supposedly to find Colt's camp, although he felt certain that Colt would be found at the ranch. It couldn't hurt to be somewhere else when the troublesome ex-convict was killed, just in case there was some talk about it in town. Soon, Pete Tyler's group was approaching Uncle Bert's ranch. They stopped on a ridge overlooking it.
What about them two that worked for McCray?
Those two old coots? I ain't worried about them. You just do what I tell you. Those two ain't gonna cause no trouble. We'll just ride right in like we was the law.
Well, I don't see that big buckskin he's been riding. It don't look like he's here.
Well, maybe not. Well, have us a look-see anyway. You two take a look in the barn. See if those two old buzzards are in there. Check the bunkhouse, too. I'm going to the house, and I don't want them sneaking up on my back.
Jack White and his partner, a man named Blanton, peeled off and headed for the barn. Had they known, they could have saved themselves the trouble. Jesse and Tuck, after talking it over the night before, decided it was not worth risking their lives to stand up to Drummond. They had ridden out before dawn that morning, heading for Laramie. Bert McCray had been splitting firewood alone since coming out that morning to find out that his help had fled. Bert heard banging coming from his front door around the side of the house.
Who the hell's banging on my door at this hour?
Still holding his axe in one hand, he walked around the house to find Frank Drummond's foreman on his front porch.
What do you want, Tyler?
I've come for that murdering son of a bitch, Colt McCray. Where is he, old man?
You got your damn nerve coming in here like that? I'm sorry to disappoint you, but Colt ain't here. Now get your sorry ass off my property.
Bert defiantly stepped up onto the porch just as Jake and Blanton rode up.
Ain't nobody down there, Pete, and from the looks of it, it looks like they lit out for good. Ain't nothing in the bunkhouse.
Tyler shifted his gaze back to Bert.
Is that right, old man? Did your help light out on you? Maybe they got more sense than you have. Now we'll have a look inside to make sure Colt ain't hiding under the bed or somewhere.
The hell you will.
You ain't gonna stop me with that axe. We'll cut you down before you get close enough to swing it.
You'll be next.
Tyler jerked his head around to discover a rifle barrel protruding through the partially open door. It was aimed right at his belly with Rena's steady hand on the trigger. His hand automatically dropped to the pistol he wore.
I wouldn't if I was you.
Rena pushed the door open wider so as not to encumber her aim. The two men with Tyler were startled at first by the sudden appearance of the stone-faced woman with the rifle. They weren't certain as to what to do. It was plain, however, that one move from one of them and Tyler was the one who would receive a belly full of lead. He held his hand well away from his gun and spoke over his shoulder to his men.
Boys, just hold on. We don't want to do nothing crazy right now. Listen, McCray, we've been deputized by the sheriff to find Colt. You'd best tell your housekeeper to put that rifle down before somebody gets hurt.
Reen has been with me for over 25 years. I ain't never been able to order her to do anything. I ain't never seen her aim a rifle at something unless she was of a mind to shoot it. If you take one more step to the house, I expect she aims to shoot you. I already told you Colt ain't here, right?
Tyler's frustration over the ridiculous situation turned rapidly to anger over being held at bay by an old woman. Rena's hand was steady, the barrel of the rifle never wavering. The expressionless face of the woman as impassive as granite. Her resolute demeanor only served to infuriate him further until it became too much for his pride to contend with. He suddenly reached for his pistol. Tyler doubled up in pain as the bullet tore into his stomach. Without hesitation, Rena calmly swung her rifle around to bear on the other two men. Both Jake and his partner, although stunned for a split second, reacted.
Get him!
Bert hurled his axe at the closest man. The deadly missile narrowly missed hitting Jake.
Oh, shit!
The axe flew by his face to land solidly against Blanton's horse. The next rifle shot took White out. In a panic now, Blanton did not discourage his horse's desire to run. Lying low on the galloping animal's neck, he retreated. Bert stepped down off his porch and picked up his axe.
Run, you bastard!
He returned to stand over the two wounded men lying before his front porch. Rena joined him.
That old witch shot me in the gut. I need a doctor. I'm bleeding bad.
Taking the rifle from Rena's hand, Bert looked down at the suffering man.
I ain't no doctor, but I've damn sure got some medicine that'll stop your pain.
Bert stepped over the body toward Jake.
No. No, no, please, no.
Will you be wanting your breakfast now?
Yeah, I reckon.
Vance McCrae paused midway between the barn and the house when a movement beyond the creek caught his eye. Squinting against the sun still climbing up the eastern ridges, he focused on the rise behind the cottonwoods, realizing then what had attracted his attention. There were three riders approaching the creek at a brisk walk. Although they were still too far away to identify, he had a feeling he knew who they were.
Papa, I'm done with the chickens!
He turned toward his son, who was coming from the chicken house behind the barn.
Sammy, go in the house!
How come?
Do as you're told, now!
While his son did as he was told, Vance turned to stare out again toward the creek. The moment he had dreaded had finally come. Since Bill and Tom had already left to round up some strays on the South Range, there was no one but him to defend his home. The riders had almost reached the creek now. He turned and followed his son.
Papa, what's going on?
He walked straight to the mantle and took his rifle down from the pegs above it.
What is it, Vance?
I don't know. There's three men I don't recognize riding up to the yard. You and Sammy better go in the pantry and close the door till I see what they want.
I told you! They come looking for Colt! He's brought those killers down on us! I told you this was gonna happen!
I ain't got time for this now, Susan. Take Sammy and hide in the pantry.
Come on, Sammy.
Though possessing little stomach for it, Vance was determined to defend his home and protect his family. Rifle in hand, he went to the front door and stood in the open doorway, waiting. Red Wiggins, obviously the leader, scowled.
Where's your brother?
My brother ain't here. What's your business here?
What's my business here? I'll tell you what my business is. My business is to clean out all the lily-livered bastards like you and your brother squatting on Rockin' D Range.
Red Wiggins suddenly drew his pistol. Vance was just able to duck inside the door as several .44 slugs ripped into the door frame, sending splinters flying. Taking the cue from their partner, Red's friends drew their weapons. Vance dropped down and crawled to a window. He knocked the shutter aside with his rifle barrel.
Look out!
Vance took out one of the intruders. Red and the other man immediately concentrated their fire on the window, causing Vance to flatten himself on the floor while lead flew over his head in a deadly hailstorm. Confident that Vance was effectively pinned down for the moment, two intruders jumped from their saddles, drawing their rifles.
Keep him busy at the window. I'm gonna sneak around behind the house. He's all by himself in there. He can't walk front and back.
Making a wide circle, Red came up behind the house to the kitchen door. Confident that Vance was totally occupied with Nate, he cautiously pushed the door open and peered inside. There was no one to be seen. He slipped quietly past the door, his rifle ready, and he tiptoed across the kitchen floor, heading for the parlor. But then his attention was immediately jerked toward the pantry door, which sounded as if it had just been shut. It took a second to register, but then a thin grin spread slowly across his whiskered face as he remembered that he had heard that Vance had a pretty young wife.
I'll be back for you in a minute, sweetheart. As soon as I take care of your husband.
With thoughts now a mixing in a little pleasure with business, Red inched up to the parlor door and cautiously peered past the door frame. Vance lay there, his rifle barrel on the windowsill, unaware of the danger behind him. Red raised his rifle.
Come on, Nate! He's done for!
Red went straight to the pantry. Standing to one side in case the lady might be holding a gun, he slowly opened the pantry door.
Well, looky here, looky here. By God, they wasn't lying. You're a pretty little thing.
The terrified woman huddled in the corner, clutching her young son tightly to her. Red reached out to her.
Come on out of there, missy, so I can get a better look at you.
Get away from me! Vance! Vance!
Ain't no use calling for him. He ain't gonna be able to help you. Come here, boy. Come here.
He grabbed the boy by the arm and dragged him from his mother's clutches.
No! Vance!
She tried to push by the intruder, blocking her pantry door. Yeah. Red easily caught her, imprisoning her roughly with his other arm. Nate came into the kitchen then.
Oh, I told you, Vance can't do you no good right now. Oh, but I can. I expect old Nate can too. Can you, Nate? Of course, Nate's gonna have to be satisfied with seconds after me and you have our little go-around.
How come you get her first? I say we flip for it. That's a fair thing to do.
My ass! I get her first, I caught her. Here, you take this young'un.
Red slung the struggling boy to Nate so he could use both hands to subdue the child's mother. Then he dragged the woman toward the hallway.
Let's go to the bedroom, darling.
Fighting helplessly against her abductor, Susan caught a glimpse of her husband lying face down by the front window as Red pulled her down the hall.
Vance!
Hey! Put another bullet in this son of a bitch out here, just in case!
I'd be happy to oblige.
Sensing a sudden relaxation of his victim, Red looked down into eyes wide and glazed with fear, and he grinned, pleased that she had given up her resistance.
Show's over. Come on, sweet thing.
Red dragged her into the bedroom. He threw her roughly on the bed and stood leering over her. He unbuckled his gun belt and belt and let his trousers drop around his boots. But he hesitated when he detected a change in the woman's eyes, as if she had seen a ghost.
What the hell?
Sensing something wrong, Red turned to look back at the door. At first, he wasn't sure if what he saw was real or not. The apparition standing in the bedroom door was almost as tall as the door frame. The morning sun rising over the corral shone through the open front door down the hallway to illuminate the figure, casting a fiery shield around him. In a dreadful moment of realization, Red reached for his pistol. He had forgotten that his gun belt lay gathered around his boots. He was dead before he hit the floor. Colt walked into the room, grabbed Red's corpse by one foot, and dragged it from in front of the bed.
It's all over now, Susan. You're all right. I've got to see about Vance.
He turned and left the room, leaving her to gather her wits. Seeing Sammy standing wide-eyed and confused in the hall, he took the boy by the arm and gently started him toward the bedroom.
Go to your mama, boy.
Yes, sir.
Kneeling beside his brother, Colt was not sure if Vance was dead or alive, but as he started to turn him over on his side, Vance's eyes fluttered open.
Oh, Colt?
Yeah, it's me. I thought you'd gone under for a minute there.
I'm shot bad. I ain't sure I'm gonna make it.
You're gonna make it. It ain't as bad as you think.
But it did look bad. It looked real bad. There was blood all over the floor. He wasn't sure what he should do, but it was obvious that he had to stop the bleeding. Looking around him, he searched for something to use as a bandage. Seeing nothing in the parlor, he hurried back to the bedroom. There he found Susan sitting on the side of the bed, holding Sammy in her arms. He grabbed a sheet and jerked it from the bed.
I need you to help me with Vance.
Vance?
Yeah, he's hurt bad, and I need your help. Come on.
Oh, God! Vance!
Someone's coming. Get that shirt off him and wrap the sheet around him.
Picking up his rifle again, Colt hurried to the front door in time to see Vance's two ranch hands approach. Bill Wilkes and Tom Mosley pulled their horses up before the porch. They both stared down at the corpse lying in the dust by the front steps.
We heard the shooting. Is everybody all right?
Vance has been shot. Hitch up the buckboard. I want you to take Vance and Susan and the young'un over to Uncle Bert's. It'll be safer for everybody to stay in one place. I'm going into town to get the doctor.
Tom can take Vance over to Bert's place. I'll stay here and clean up this mess.
I'll help you load them on their horses, and I'll leave them at the sheriff's office. Drummond can take care of him from there.